The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 6th of November, 2018. On the podcast today, Hanno Pengilly, Chief Development Officer of Ncondesi Energy, NCCL. And Hanno provides an operational update for the company's integrated 300 megawatt power and coal mine project in Mozambique. I also have on the podcast Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, and we talk about Regal Petroleum. We also mentioned Crawshaw's, which is the company Alan mentioned recently, but has gone into administration. Plus, Bluefield Solar Income Fund, Sativa Investments, Catenay Innovations, and IMC Exploration. I also have two lists, the top fives of the most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10s of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio and allocate to unquoted companies, Rockpool, one of our sponsors, offers growth equity and high-yield lending for established and profitable private companies. Investing can be tax efficient, and Rockpool Services is based on thorough due diligence and continual company monitoring. Capital at risk. Visit rockpool.uk.com or call 0203 8548 100.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hanno Pengilly, Chief Development Officer of Ncondesi Energy. NCCL is the ticker there. Hanno, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good morning.
You had a busy day yesterday. Your AGM, your project update, and so a lot of information getting out there. And we'll delve into that in a bit, and I'm sure you know exactly what shareholders are asking you all the time. But before we do that, quickly, for people not familiar with Ncondesi's story, Hanno, what is it all about, please?
So Ncondesi is a leading market... So, God, Justin, I have to start that again. I'm sorry.
Do you want me to tee you up?
I had two words in my mouth, and I wanted to try and say them at the same time.
Go for it when you're ready.
So Ncondesi is a leading power development company with one of the most advanced stage coal-fired power plant projects, which we are looking to develop in northern Mozambique. It's a 300 megawatt project with an integrated coal mine, which is looking at supplying electricity into the Mozambican grid by 2023-2024. And we are looking at developing that project at the moment with international power developers and operators, General Electric and China Machinery Engineering Corporation, who are currently under negotiations with the company to acquire 60% of the project and be the sort of lead developers, owners and operators of the project.
Marvelous stuff. So you did a general update yesterday, and you broke it down into several pieces, but you started off with the joint development agreement and the process update. Take us through that, if you could, Hanno.
Yeah, so overall, we're very excited about what we put out yesterday. We've been working on it for a while. And I think, you know, the overall news represents major de-risking events that have taken place at the project and the corporate level. On the project level, I think these events further confirm that our project is the leading power project in Mozambique. We've received not one, but two support documents, one from the Mozambican State Power Utility, which will be purchasing 25 years worth of power off of the project, EDM. We received a signed MOU from EDM, and the other from the Department of Energy, which will govern the power project and grant us our generation license. We've received a letter of support from the Department of Energy. And you know, I think what's very important about these two documents is they both confirm that the project is in an advanced stage. They confirm that coal is part of the energy generation mix and that our project falls within both government and EDM's strategic plans for power offtake and generation. And they also confirm the key next steps that the project needs to take with its partners, General Electric and China Machinery Engineering Corporation, to get to the major next milestone, which is basically to agree an offtake tariff. you know, we can. I think the important message here is that we've talked about the fact in previous RNSs that we went out to Mozambique with our partners. We introduced our partners earlier this year. Subsequent to that, we delivered an updated power tariff which included updated CapEx and OpEx numbers to both the government and EDM. We believe that tariff was very competitive and attractive. It was more than 10% lower than a tariff that we had previously agreed with EDM 3 years ago. So we were feeling fairly confident with that tariff. Subsequent to delivering that tariff, we have now received these two support documents from both government and EDM to support the project in moving forward with our partners and confirming them as our partners in the project, effectively by signing binding documentation in a joint development agreement. So critical milestones for us, and it now allows us to move forward with finalizing our project timetable with the key milestones to close the project and start operations. Now, critical to those are the signing of a binding joint development agreement. It was always part of the strategy. It was always part of the non-binding offer that was submitted in November last year by our partners that we would be working towards this agreement. And government has basically come forward and said that, you know, this is the next step that they are looking for us to complete and our partners to looking to complete for the project to move to the next level. And now what we are doing with our partners is we've updated our timetable based on the fact that we've just received these support docs last week. And we will now look to finalize a timetable that has the critical milestones, namely the signing of the JDA, the confirmation from our partners that the CapEx and OpEx numbers have now gone firm, you know, and they do that by submitting binding, what they call EPC and O&M documentation, which basically means that the, you know, it gives government and the state utility comfort and confidence that the numbers that we have put into our model that we have to share with government and EDM are reliable and unlikely to change, or, you know, there's a low risk of renegotiation during the tariff negotiation phase. Now, with regards to timing, you know, we anticipate that the JDA won't take more than 3 months once we've agreed the updated timetable. And we've had that discussion with our partners earlier in the year and believe that that is deliverable. And with regards to the EPC and O&M contracts, we are currently looking at understanding, you know, when realistically those can be delivered, taking into account Christmas holidays and Chinese New Year at the beginning of February. So we're really going to try and do as much as we can between now and the end of January, push to get the JDA done before we receive the bids. The two are not interrelated, so they'll be worked on in parallel work streams. But the idea, I think, is that the JDA will be completed first, followed by the EPC and O&M process. And within that, we will have the, you know, I think once we deliver those two documents, the anticipation would be that we submit an update, a final tariff proposal, which would then be approved by EDM. And following that milestone, we would then go into the key binding documents, which are the power concession agreement, which is basically your generation license with government, as well as the power purchase agreement, which is a 25-year offtake agreement with EDM. I think very important to highlight that, you know, we've been through this process before. So many of these documents have already been drafted. None of this is new. Both the JDA document is an existing document that we've been updating based on our discussions with our partners, and entering into the tariff discussions, as well as the power purchase agreement, as well as the generation license. Those documents were all drafted in near executable form in March of last year. So, you know, we are well positioned to close out on all of those milestones. In addition, the announcement also gives an update on the shareholder loan. Mm-hmm. We have been renegotiating a restructuring package on the existing shareholder loan that sits on the company's balance sheet with loan holders. And, you know, we are comfortable now that we are in the final stages of closing that out. Negotiations have largely been completed and final documentation was submitted to all lenders on Friday of last week. And so we expect confirmation of that restructuring imminently. As soon as we receive signed docs back from everyone, we'll make the necessary announcement to the market to say that is now complete. So also a very important milestone for the company. Also worth highlighting that yesterday at our AGM, we had approval of all the necessary resolutions to execute the restructuring. So we are now in a, as I say, a very good position to see that out. And so what I expect in the coming weeks is some good news flow on the shareholder loan being restructured. We have an MOU with EDM, which they've submitted to us that we need to countersign with our parties. I expect us to all countersign that and submit that before the end of the month. And I also expect that we will be finalizing the timetable and announcing that to the market in the coming weeks, targeting the end of this month. But it's worth highlighting that that's a timetable that will need to be approved by both our partners as well as government, which may take a little bit longer than the end of the month. But certainly we're working towards the end of the month and having that done. So overall, as I say, a lot of good news, a lot of project de-risking. This has sort of unlocked the project timetable, if you will, allowed things to move forward. We've largely been waiting for both news flow on the support from government as well as news flow on when we would get the loan restructured. So these are very important milestones, and I think sort of indicate sort of exciting times ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, you say that sort of, like it's hard to say, of course, an exact timeline, but you believe that the JDA can be completed within 3 months of an updated timetable, and you reckon that timetable will be agreed, well, before the end of the year, hopefully?
Well, before the end of this month. I mean, to be clear, we've already submitted the timetable to our partners. I think the issue here is that we're now at a stage where it'll be a timetable that's also submitted to government for approval.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll be something that, you know, everybody's going to need to be able to stick to, particularly because we are going to be asking a lot of government and they are not going to respond well if we're missing our own deadlines. So, you know, right now the pressure is on GNCMEC to make sure that they have a timetable in place that they are comfortable they can deliver on. And as I say, the JDA, I think, is less of an issue because it's a document that was submitted to them back in December of last year. It's a document that we had already drafted and executed with a previous partner. So it's, you know, it's a well-advanced document. I don't see that being a major issue in getting that completed. The tricky one is the EPC process and the O&M bids because, you know, those are binding bids on $1 billion CapEx spend. And, you know, once those documents have been submitted and signed, you know, there's very little room, wiggle room on those numbers. So, you know, the parties will want to ensure that, you know, they've submitted the right information. And I guess the critical path here is that, you know, a large component of that is going to come from China with Chinese equipment. And, you know, I think everyone is very conscious of the fact that, you know, China shuts down in the month of February. So obviously we're going to try and get as far as we can before the beginning of Feb. But, you know, that does have implications on timing. And obviously when we receive the bids, we also need to review them. We don't just pass them straight on to government. We will also need to review them, make sure we are happy with them. So you're probably looking in all, you know, from a realistic point of view, you know, that the EPC and O&M, probably sort of a March, April event. But again, we need to make sure that these timetables are approved by all parties, including government. And we will put that out to go. We will put that out to the market as soon as that is in place.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Hello, you know what to do here. If someone's liking the sound of this, the progress you're making, but are still not following the story yet, in summary, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
So we are the most advanced project in Mozambique, if not Southern Africa, particularly with a baseload project and coal. We also have identified leading partners who will fund the majority, you know, up to 60% or more of the equity check at financial close. Again, I say it's a $1 billion project, so it's a major de-risking element that we have identified these partners, and we are one of the few projects that's actually been able to identify large strategic partners who are prepared to fund the majority of the equity check. And finally, I believe that we are in a very exciting sector where Africa is a clear outlier globally in terms of access to power, and Mozambique is leading the charge in terms of providing full access to power by 2030 and looking specifically for coal-fired energy to be on the grid by 2023-2024. And Nkondezi is the leading player ready to supply that energy. So we are well positioned.
Marvelous stuff. Hannah, thanks for spending the time with us, and hopefully we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're on, Al.
I'm very good. Thanks, Jess. I trust your ears are recovered from Bonfire or Guy Fawkes last night.
Oh, do you know what? I'm a grumpy old man about that stuff now. Really am.
Yeah.
It's just, just people bangers going off and I'm in bed. And thinking, what are you doing? What pleasure do you get from that? This cat's noise. I saw a video actually online on Twitter. Thing, this dog really shaking, almost like convulsing, having a fit of scare. And I think, do you know what? You don't need to do that. You don't need to do bangers in your own back garden and scare lots of pets. Go to an organised event, yes, but stop letting them off in your backyard. There's no fun. What's the point in that? It's a waste of money. It's bad for the environment. And it's also not good for pets. Annoying.
We have two Yorkshire Terriers, and actually they're completely unaffected by it. They couldn't give two hoots. But another family member has a dog, which she's actually sent away to a kennels, which is far away from any bonfire displays, simply because the dog absolutely freaks out, and it is cool. Now I will say I used to be into Guy Fawkes Night and all that some years ago, but I think it's had its day now. Stick to the big displays, you know. Don't do it in your back garden and upset everyone. I think that's a fairly very relevant message today.
Yeah, absolutely right. Marvellous. Let's get on to stocks and about whinging old men we are. By the way, I did see, I mean, you mentioned a couple of times, and I said, I don't eat meat anymore. And you mentioned Crawshaws. I saw yesterday it's gone into administration, isn't it?
It did. That, very sad news indeed. And Crawshaws.
Not for animals, though.
No, not for animals, certainly. It's very sad. I mean, this is a company that had a line in butchery and were developing a chain of out of town warehouses to sell sausages and meat basically directly to the retailer, and they were in the process of moving away from the high street because the high street stores were hard for them to maintain, and very sadly the company simply couldn't generate any more support from its investors and shareholders to keep the operation going. There was a change in the board, and the board attempted to make the changes and to cut the costs of the company, but the ongoing costs were too high. The revenues that the company generated weren't enough. So it's a sad day. You know, no one likes to see a company fail, and I felt there was a genuine investment case there, and my apologies to anyone that invested into that company, but this is what happens in investing. You know, you will have winners and losers, and just occasionally, out of the blue, as happened, of course, with Carillion, which is well documented, these things happen. It wasn't the company was badly run. It's just that it didn't have the correct model for the market it was in at the time.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm in a company right now, right, that's it's so nice, utility-wise. You know utility-wise? They've literally Neil Woodford was in there at about £2 or £1.50 or something like that. They're now 10 pence a share.
Yeah,
they're down to
yeah.
7 million market cap. Jeff Thompson, the ex-CEO and founder, who was responsible for a bit of, over-ambitious accounting because they'd get contracts in and they'd be forward contracted, and then essentially they'd have to revise the contract because the company hadn't used as much energy. So, they'd have to pull back or take a loss on these companies. So he was sort of replaced, and he was a board shake-up, and he went a non-exec. Then he went to basically stepped down completely. But he's been selling the heck out of the shares. He owns about 4 million shares. Shares left, which are 6% of the company, and there's no volume in this company at all normally anyway, but he's just putting through like half a million a day, and it's just been hammering it. Now it's got to the stage where I thought it was a good deal at 30 million market cap, because the revenue was like 60 million, then a 25% margin, and but now they're down at 7 million, which is worrying because they've got debt at about 17 million. So but saying that, if they're margined, they're going to turn over this year about 54 million, and their market cap is, you know, and hopefully this has gone through accounting issues and all that stuff. But we need clarity, basically, shareholders on their accounting and updates coming soon. But I just don't know whether it's, a reflection of the business? This because you know, when the share price takes a massive hit like this, you get started getting worried. I don't know whether it's just a reflection of this or just because he's selling like crazy, you know?
I have personal experience of this. I moved away from Utility Warehouse because their prices were going up. We switched to them when we moved here. Very good for the first couple of years, and the prices started to creep up. And there was no sense of customer service. And then we had an engineer come out here once to fix the phone, and the guy was just hopeless, didn't know what he was doing. So I kept on thinking about it. Then I saw this ad for People's Energy and got a quote from them and literally halved my energy costs. So I don't think they're particularly competitive. I think they need a dramatic shake-up, but I think what they've done...
Well, they have done the shake-up. It's the trouble, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a competitive area now, and there are lots of companies in that space. And I think, the Telecom Plus, as it was then, Utility Warehouse, were blazing a trail at the time. But I don't think they've adapted. I don't think they were a game changer that they were at the time, but they didn't carry on leading from the front. I think they were just happy to sit back and just corner it in for a few years, and now they're paying the price for that. So it is what it is. You've got to move with the times.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that, turning over 52 million, 54 million, they are a market cap of, because obviously, I mean, shit is dynamic. So if the share price goes down, people say, you know, I've looked at shares, so someone has suggested a share to me, and I said, no, not interested in all that. So, and then, but half a year later, I bought shares in that company. Well, I told you about this half a year ago, and I said, yeah, but sure. Listen, it was double or triple price then. Shares are dynamic. The valuation of the companies goes down, and what was, you know, not attractive a year ago can be attractive now because the share price has gone down, and people, you know, some people don't understand that. So
absolutely.
And sooner or later, it becomes a bargain, you know, and as long as they can, as long as they are turning over a profit and can chip away at that debt, there's no problem. They've got a £25 million, you know, fund for the bank facility, so... What the problem is, if they're loss-making and they've got debt, that's the problem. They can't reduce that debt. That's the issue. But I'm just thinking, if they can reduce that debt, it's fine, really, you know?
Well, it is, yeah, absolutely. The same happened to me with Thomas Cook a few years ago when Thomas Cook was supposedly going bust, and the company was turning over, I think, about $10 billion a year. And whichever way you looked at it, you know, there was an opportunity for it to restructure. And the market cap was about $170 million. So I think a lot of people bought on that stage, and, you know, I made some money on the recovery of that. But I mean, that is what happens. As you say, you know, a company that's seemingly out of favor falls so far that actually the asset is worth something. If it's restructured, then there's an opportunity for gains in the share price. And you're absolutely right. You know, that opportunity could now be with a Utility Warehouse or Telecom Plus.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, that's we took cover Crawshaw Utility Wise. I'm not saying it's going bust at all. I'm just saying, you know, it's worrying. The selling is making people worry, and people selling begets selling sometimes, isn't it? People just sell because other people are selling, and they've doubts.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah.
So anyway, what are you looking at? What stocks are you?
Okay, well, firstly, a company called Regal Petroleum, RPT. Now, this is a company that has three gas fields in northeast Ukraine, which the company is AIM-listed, and it's produced gas and oil from the region in abundance over the past few years. Last in September, the company announced interim results. Revenues doubled to $24 million. Gross profits were up to $12 million from just $3 million the year before, and very strong cash generation during the period as well. A lot of the cash that the company's generated is being reinvested into the projects and acquisitions that the company has planned, and the chairman said they're looking forward to further successes and based on the development activities for the year. The stock was actually picked out by VectorVest. It was a number of metrics on the VectorVest platform flag up stocks at various stages, and this was flagged up in July on what's called a relative timing metric, which is a stock price trend indicator. VectorVest measures these indicators on a scale of 0 to 2. This came in at, Regal came in at 1.73. Also had a 1.62 rating on the relative value indicator, which is an indicator of long-term price appreciation. And this was all done, this was published last week on the VectorVest website when the stock was trading at 52p. Today, it's up to 60p. VectorVest have a technical target and a fundamental target of 82p to go. And this, the company, you know, given given the fundamental turnaround and given these, given this series of markers that have been flagged up by Vectorvest, the company is sounding out of caution. Oil and gas stocks really go up in a straight line, but with a bullish charting configuration and good forward visibility, this is in the view of Vectorvest one to back. And I mean, already since last week, we've seen shares move from 52p to 60p. So who's to say that given the current trend and given the fundamental developments, it won't go on and hit the price of 82p?
Well, who's to say, Al?
Who's to say? Indeed, yes. Well, it's when you're looking at a stock, it's a series of factors that should be taken into account if you're looking to buy a stock. And to my mind, Regal has delivered a very strong set of interim figures. There's a very strong charting configuration at present, and also, you know, you've got this sort of third party validation from the Vectorvest software, you know, which is in my view highly significant. So anyway, please do your own research. As we heard with Crawshaw today, sometimes it doesn't work out. But this is Regal Petroleum has been trading for a good number of years, and it looks to be a good company to back at this moment in time.
Yeah, well, like I say, yeah. Do you know, it's always I don't like it when a stock goes belly up, but I mean, it's a good reminder sometimes of the risk out there, you know.
It's a reminder of the risks in trading shares, and also, you know, just the need to constantly monitor what you're doing and evaluate what you're doing as well. And you know, some people may have invested in Crawshaw and taken the decision to sell out before the company went belly up, and that's great. But you know, the business case was there at some point, and clearly, you know, other investors felt so too. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I felt those Crawshaw meat, which a lot of people are becoming flexitarians now, you know, eating less meat, because we are eating too much meat. I mean, regardless of what your stance is on morally or whatever, I mean, we are generally, on average, I mean, we are eating too much meat. It's not good for us. It's not good for the environment either. So, and also they're on the high street, which is a double whammy, really, isn't it? Or they are a retailer, I mean, not on the high street, but a retailer, which is, we know, have had a hard work this, or so many retailers gone through this year. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I mean, okay, I'm a meat eater. You know, I went out on Sunday morning with a bunch of guys I ride motorbikes with, and we went out to a cafe that's nearby here, had a sausage and egg sandwich in the morning, which is very nice, and we had a gammon steak for supper last night. So yeah, I'm sorry, I'm in the latter category there, just so.
It was funny to me, but I will say, you know, health wise, you've got to be careful and cut it down a bit, because we are eating too much, especially
bacon
and gammon. There's good evidence that isn't it particularly good for you, but. There we are. Yep. But okay, Al, what else are you looking at?
Okay, back in September, we discussed Bluefield Solar Income Fund. Yeah. BSIF is the epic code. Now, this company was trading then, the fund was then trading at. I'm just bringing the chart up now. It's very slow, this computer. The company, as the name implies, invests into a series of solar projects around the UK, and the company it's a liquid investment trust. It pays dividends twice yearly, and it's Guernsey based. The fund IPO'd 5 years ago. Total returns since that time on an asset value and total returns basis have exceeded 50%, which is pretty good. And indeed, during the mini crash or the mini correction, I say not crash, the mini correction we had over the past 6 to 8 weeks, the fund has continued to perform, and it's now trading at 125 pence, been as high as 126p on the year, been as low as 110p. So it has consistently performed without a blip during that time. In fact, when we last picked the stock up, when we last discussed the stock, it was trading at just below 120p. So it's completely ignored all the shenanigans and all of the volatility during the correction and continues to grow. So As an alternative investment, as if you're investing, you know, an investment in solar energy, an investment that pays a dividend, delivers a steady a steady performance and isn't too affected by the global macroeconomic picture, this is one that investors might want to look at. It's certainly different, and if you're looking to broaden or diversify your portfolio further, this is a fund I think is well worth a look.
Yeah, well, it's an idea. Well, I did one of those guys on the podcast over a year ago, I think, and they came on. I don't know where it started, but he seemed bemused by the end of the concept of podcasts. He was like doing it, but not really understanding what he was doing.
a podcast? What will they think of next?
He was a bit like that. Right. That was bemusing. But good to see they're performing, because he certainly didn't on the podcast. Right, so what's next, Al?
Okay, just very briefly, you want to touch on Cat and Eye Innovation that we discussed last week as well. Now, subsequently, we spoke last week. The podcast was published on Tuesday. At the end of last week, the company announced it had raised $525,000 in cash, $360,000 from a cornerstone investor, and the rest were taken up by management, which is obviously a massive endorsement of the company, but also the fact they now have a cornerstone investor in place. They didn't go to the market to raise this money, and also the money was raised and supported by the board at 0.12p versus the 0.078p I think when we spoke about the stock last week. So this is a massive endorsement of Cat and I's blockchain technology, and obviously their Sequestrum application, I think, has got a great future. There's I mentioned last week that they'd signed a deal with Southend Football Club, prior to that Aston Villa Football Club, and they also have a commercial contract with an insurance company to monitor fire doors. This is practical application of DLT, distributed ledger technology, and this sort of endorsement, this sort of support, well ahead of where the share price was last week, I think is absolute validation of the model, and very exciting future for the company.
Yeah, cornerstones must pay a good return, because there's a lot of cornerstone investors I've heard in previous discussions with many companies. Yeah. So I don't know what the return is on cornerstones, but they sound quite good.
Yes, yeah, indeed. Cornerstone investors, yeah.
I don't know.
I'm slow on the update this morning.
You should launch a company called Cornerstone, Al, because everyone then who invests in the company would be a cornerstone investor.
Yeah, they'd be a cornerstone investor, wouldn't they? Indeed.
and everyone could boast that. So, yes, I'm a cornerstone investor. Are you? Yes, very impressive. I only own £5 worth of shares, but I'm a cornerstone investor. Cool. Anything else, Al?
A couple of next listed companies for you. Sativa Investments. We had a cannabis theme last week with Ananda. We discussed. This is another company, Sativa Investments, listed on Next. That's actually had a pretty spectacular couple of months. Raised $1.5 million when it went public. Mostly from the CEO Jeremy Thomas's friends and family. Currently valued around $4 million. And the company, again, a bit like Ananda, it's identifying and investing in global opportunities relating to medical cannabis, which is it's a huge opportunity. And of course, significantly on the 1st of November, the UK is now supporting medicinal cannabis and legalizing certain aspects of the production in that area.
I think the market cap is about 40 million, isn't it? I think it's about 46 million, because I know it's gone crazy and gone bananas. I think it is around 46 million. I think you got your decimal place point in the wrong place. Let me have a look here. Rights.
Sorry, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. This is okay. So yeah, that's I'm reading from a piece of data which is outdated.
I know it's called 46 gangbusters,
It has.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's had a phenomenal phenomenal year really since it came to market. So listed at 1.375 is the low, and it's now trading at 9p. So it's had a spectacular year, been as high as 12 13p on the year as well, which is pretty impressive. But yeah, so Sativa's invested into Veratus, which runs testifying the optimum combinations of the two key compounds to deal with specific ailments, and also to Rapid Dose Therapeutics, which is delivered or developed drug delivery technologies. In other words, a way to deliver cannabis oils accurately and to the root of the problem. Got a couple of other investments too. But the company is looking to grow and expand further. It's looking to gain the rights to Rapid Dose's products in the UK and Europe. And with the opportunities that are now arising for medicinal cannabis around the world, obviously Canada's legalized it, and other sort of domiciles are looking at legalizing medicinal cannabis too. This looks to be a sea change that's underway that will be very, very hard to stop. And I think a lot of governments around the world that might already have rejected it will now be reconsidering their decision purely because they may actually lose votes if they decide not to legalize it. So Sativa Investments looks to have a very, very, very bright future, as indeed to all of the cannabis stocks. But I think Sativa has done particularly well and has.
Well, that's why I'm not interested in it, see?
Yeah.
I think it's done a big rise. Ananda's at 1.4 or 1.5 million market cap. And I'm just thinking, you know, like I said, it's one of the things that all boats rise on a. Oh, I'm going to sneeze.
Bless you.
All boats rise on a rising tide or something like that, isn't it? But I mean, like I said, yep. I mean, it's very. There's a lot of potential in this medicinal cannabis sector, and I just think Ananda's yet to benefit from it, which other companies have. You know, I think, you know, come on, it's playing catch up. Really, it needs to play catch up. But that's why I've taken a little foothold in that. I do own stock in Ananda, not a lot, but a little bit. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly one that I'm looking to buy into.
It's just good. Yeah, on next. I don't know how to buy it. I can't buy it via my stockbroker, which is annoying. I did buy it on that Tethers app when they first launched, but apart from that, I haven't bought anything. So it's quite annoying that I've got to that, but I can't buy any more, really. I would buy something.
I think you find most brokers can. I mean, you can't do it online, but you can actually sort of place the call to your broker to get the trade place. I know through Hargreaves Lansdown, I've been able to sort of hold stock in my SIP and in my advisor. So you should be able to.
Yeah. Anything else, Al?
Yeah, just finally, whilst we're on next, want to go back to IMC Exploration Group, which is a company that has assets in the Avoca region in Southwest Ireland. IMC has been around for a few years, and the former management, Liam McGrath and Neil Ring, stepped down early this year. And were replaced by Eamon O'Brien and Catherine Byrne, who is also director of a communications company in Dublin. So there's a new momentum and impetus underneath the company now. Early this year, they announced a joint venture with Trove Rehabilitation Limited to work through the mine waste and tailings and spoils at the Avoca copper mine, which is within the company's licence area. Civil surveys undertaken have shown that significant quantities of gold, lead, and copper remain in the spoil heaps. IMC also has a base metals project in Kilbricken in Central Ireland too, and clearly, with the upsurge in small miners over the past year, we're in the run up now to the full year results, and what I would expect to see would be some developments and additional news on the tailings project. The shares are currently trading at 1.5 pence. Has a market cap of just under 4 million. The shares have been as high as 2.5p. That was in July, so it's pretty well where it's been the rest of the year, but now we're in the run-up to these final results. As I say, I think we can I'd like to think we can expect some news from the company. Clearly there's no guarantee of that, but once they start working on this tailings project, they know the resources there. It's simply a matter of extracting it and then getting it to market.
Marvel stuff. And like I said, everything here are investment ideas. Some ideas don't work out, like Crawshaw, you know, but yep. But some do. You never know. That's where you have to do your own research. But there we are. And at the moment, I just find the market hard work again at the moment. You know, it did have an initial bounce, but we're trudging again. I find it really hard. I look at my portfolio, and I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 companies down and 5 up. But, you know, the ones that are down, I think, are further down the ones that are up. So it's quite annoying. But hopefully, after the midterms now coming out, I mean, results from that are out sort of soon, aren't they? So hopefully a Brexit breakthrough as well. Hopefully we'll have a nice run-up to Christmas. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I think so. I think, I'm quite positive on Brexit. As I've always said, I think it's a game of brinkmanship, and I think the EU are just they're just being bloody mind about it. But I think we're going to get there eventually, and the Northern Ireland border won't be an issue. I'm sure they'll work something on that front too. So I am positive about it, because basically it has to happen for the good of the EU economy and the good of the UK economy. You know, no one wants to deliberately crash an economy, even though Juncker and Tusk seem to be behaving like Sepp Blatter did with FIFA, but anyway, that's another story.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Well, thanks for that, fella, and we'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Joss. Catch up next week.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Alpha Growth, ALGW. At 4, Oilex, OEX. At 3, Petromatad, that's MATD. At 2, Union Jack Oil, UJO. And number 1, most followed company rising today, it's Tuple, T-O-O-P. I do hold some shares in that. But the market is feeling a bit tricky at the moment. It's a bit sticky. And we've had a sort of a little bit of a relief rally after the massive sell-off. But now people, I think, are sort of trying to exit positions. But I think, listen, it's going to be fine towards the end of the year. We'll get Brexit out of the way. We'll get the midterms out of the way. It'll be fine. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Predator Oil and Gas, results of extraordinary general meeting. At 4, Greatland Gold, notice of AGM and annual report. At 3, Ncondizi Energy, that's a result of AGM. At 2, Serica Energy, acquisition of Marubeni interest in Bruce and Keith. And number 1, most liked RNS came from Talou Energy, T-L-O-U is ticker there, and that's an operations update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.